it's that time again, and the doctor is in. Yeah, this is Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, coming at you one more time. Just because we've got those computery things to do again. Yes, indeed. Computery things. You say, what in the world is a computery thing? Well, it's things that have to do with computers. Yeah, well, anyway. Once again, Dr. Bill's here, you're there, and all's right with the world, because it's another geeky week that we've had, and we want to share it with you. We've got not one, but two geek cultures for you this week. Whoa, how cool is that? But they're short, so we can get two in the same time as one big one. So, anyway, I hope you'll enjoy them. They're strange. They're really odd, and that's what makes them geek culture. But we'll get into that in just a minute. First of all, let me say, as I usually do, that we are proud members of the Tech Podcast Network, and we encourage you to go over to techpodcast.com and check out all the other podcasts that are part of the network. It'll do you good what it don't hurt you. All right, let's talk about the geek culture for this week. Two different aspects of geek culture, actually. The first is that, well, how do I get into this? You know that I've talked in the past about net neutrality and how there are forces at work that are trying to destroy the network that we've come to love so much, that vast wasteland that we call the internet. They want to control it. They want to take it over. They want to determine what you look at on the internet. These people are evil. Now, in the spirit of educating people about what could happen, if we don't oppose the forces that are trying to drive this evil notion of taking over the internet, if we just let that go, then one day we could all go retro. What does that mean? Well, you know, back in the early days, back when I was a kid in school, yeah, I know, long time ago. Back then, we had film strips that we watched, and we had 8mm and 16mm films. And they would crank that projector up, and it click, 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 it made all kinds of noise. You could barely hear the movie over the noise. Well, somebody has taken a retro approach to showing. Because, see, if this begins to happen and the internet begins to get absorbed into this weird corporatization that might occur, then we could find ourselves going retro. And it would be a terrible thing. So let's listen to the Internet of Tomorrow.
With net neutrality out of the way, telecommunications and cable companies can finally bring you the next generation of the Internet. Confused by all the options the World Wide Web had to offer? Don't worry, we've made all the choices for you. Frustrated by the lack of professionalism on blogs and homegrown websites? Consider them a thing of the past. Tired of all those pesky small businesses competing with the giant corporations you love so dearly? Well, we've smashed them to pieces. Behold the Internet of tomorrow. Dozens of sites and services await you.
Yeah. Dozens. Dozens of sites and services await you. Not millions! Yeah, the internet of tomorrow. You know, don't worry about all that choice. You don't need all that choice. We'll do it for you. Okay, that was a little heavy-handed, but it got the point across. Next geek culture that we want to talk about is a very strange one. This is actually a video, and I encourage you to look at the link that I have in the show notes for this podcast and go watch the video, because watching it brings such greater understanding to the strangeness of this video. This was on Dig this week, and basically what happened is this guy dug up a video that was made back over 10 years ago. I think it probably was like a commercial that he may have aired on his local TV station. I don't know. I'm not sure what motivated them to do this video, but the guy dressed up like a milkman with the little milkman hat, and he had a full beard, and he did this video calling himself the Computer Man. And apparently this business is a Mac shop. They sell Macintoshes, Apple products. And he was comparing the Mac world to the computer world in the song lyrics. And he basically told his boss that if it made the front page of Dig, he would eat the milkman hat that he still had. Well, it made the front page of Dig. Last time I checked, it had 1,400 and some odd digs. So, dude, get ready to eat your hat. Okay? But here's the audio from the video, The Computer Man.
I'm the Computer Man. I'm the Macintosh man with the virus scan. Moving your files all across the land. Some Photoshop filters in After Dark. Get your Microsoft Office Express, your Quark. Millions of colors with a VRAM chip. How about a system crash that'll make you flip? I'm the Computer Man. Saying Windows 95 is plug and play. If it's fonts you want, you gotta go to MacWay. Log right on as my personal guest. You'll have Macintosh software on your desk. Send me an email with your request. If it's hardware you want, baby, I'm the best. I'm the Computer Man.
Get into a computer.
Yeah, the Computer Man. There you go. You need to go check out the video. Get the link from the show notes. It's odd. So, your geek culture for the week, strange as it may seem. And if you play that song over and over enough times, it'll get stuck in your head. So, it really does qualify as true viral video geek culture for this week. Okay, let's go to the blog, thecomputercurmudgeon.com. The place we love to go to hear all the strangeness that's out there in the world. Now, of course, let me remind you that thecomputercurmudgeon.com is a URL that is easy to spell. I'm sure you can spell it as well as I. Well, maybe not as well as I, because I do it all the time, but it is thecomputercurmudgeon.com. So, go there and read the blog from which we do the podcast. And the first item for this week is MS Paint as a web application. Huh? You're probably familiar with MS Paint, the venerable Microsoft editing software for images of various kinds. Not extremely, well, how shall we put it? It doesn't have as many features as a lot of graphics editing tools. And actually, it is so retro in its abilities, so diminished in its abilities. There are people who have pictures on the web that they did with Paint just to show how cool they are that they could have done it with Paint. I mean, you think about it. It's kind of like tying your hands behind your back and then painting the Sistine Chapel. You know what I mean? It's, what? Why did you do that? I'm sure my buddy Scott Redmond is out there going, MS Paint, you've got to be kidding. I mean, the dude is a graphics guru, but he uses all kinds of high-end things to do his graphics amazingness, like, of course, the heading on thecomputercurmudgeon.com, with my Santa with an attitude. Check it out. But at any rate, imagine trying to do that graphic with MS Paint. Oh, man. But here's what's weird about this particular blog article, and that is this guy wrote an exact, almost exact clone. I mean, it looks and feels exactly the same, operates just pretty much exactly the same as Paint, yet it is a web application. And he wrote it as a near pixel perfect copy of Microsoft Paint. He wrote it in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript using the canvas tag specified by WHATWG and supported by Safari, Firefox, Opera, Internet Explorer. The web app is not authorized, supported, or in any way affiliated with Microsoft. Now, the guy that wrote this is a guy named Christopher Clay. Now, as I say in my thing, hats off to you, guy, because how in the world did he get it to look this MS Paint-like? And it's a web application. Dude, it's very cool. But it's more to me of something that's just fascinating and strange and odd than it is actually useful. If I'm going to use something like, you know, Paint or graphics application, I'm going to use something higher end than Paint. Okay? Which brings me to an email that I got this week. And I'm opening up my email now. It's opening. Yes. And there goes all the spam. Blip. Don't you love Thunderbird? I just love Thunderbird. You open it up, the spam goes zoop, blip, and it's gone. It's just so cool. All right. Let's see. Where is that email? There it is. Yes, yes, yes. There it is. Here's somebody that wrote me, Richard in Florida. And Richard says, I've been using MS Paint for a number of years. Bless your heart. And with the help of a great number of small bitmap file libraries that I've created, I have developed some fairly sophisticated image files. Wow. I've found some shortcomings in Paint. No. Me too. Which seemed to me it would make it much more useful. And I sent a message to Microsoft with suggestions on how small improvements would make it much more useful. I never got any acknowledgement for my suggestions. Amazing that Microsoft doesn't care about MS Paint. Well, really, I guess it isn't, you know, when you think about it, because what do they care? They threw it into Office just, or not Office, Windows, just to have something that they can say, look, we do graphics manipulation. It's really not designed for real graphics manipulation. It's just there to frustrate you, which is what it did with this guy. Frustrated him. He sent his suggestions to Microsoft. They ignored him. Now, he says in his email, it occurred to me that someone may have made clones of Paint that might have gone beyond cloning and added some features that are obvious shortcomings of the program. In my attempt to find such a program online, I came across your website via your reference to a web-based version of MS Paint, which is the one that I just mentioned. Which is pretty amazing that he searched and found it and found it that way. I decided I would contact you to see if you knew of any MS Paint clones. Besides finding one called Super MS Paint or MS Paint Deluxe or MS Paint Plus, I'm also interested in a clone that would run under Linux. I can use it under Wine, but it runs very slowly under Wine. Man, this guy really loves Paint. I realize there are a lot of image processing and drawing programs that are far superior to MS Paint, such as the GIMP. So he already knows about the GIMP. That's why I didn't go there. But I already have a lot of experience with MS Paint and found that it is almost adequate for my needs. Bless his heart. The guy is amazing that he's that good with Paint that he can do almost what he needs with Paint. But he says, if you have any suggestions, short of writing a clone myself, I would be interested in hearing from you. Now, he also says in a PS, I have a small consulting business entitled Curmudgeon Software and found it interesting that you're using the same name. Wow. So this guy must be like me, an old dude, a curmudgeon, that started out with MS Paint and has never proceeded beyond it. So what did the doctor do? I sent him an email concerning, you guessed it, paint.net. Okay? Now, because of his email, I went back out to the paint.net website because I knew they're approaching version 3. The guy is working on it. He's almost got version 3 there. But it's still in the beta stage. But I downloaded the beta, and dude, the beta of version 3 absolutely rocks. I mean, I thought version 2.72 or whatever it was good. Beta 2 of version 3 absolutely rocks. I love some of the new features. Whoa. Now, here's the cool thing about Paint.net. The whole idea of Paint.net was to take the general usefulness of MS Paint and carry over that functionality, but then improve it and add to it. So the idea was, if you're familiar with MS Paint, you should be able to use Paint.net and kind of get used to it a little easier. You know, it's make sure that everything's kind of where it should be and all that kind of stuff. But then it add in all the features and ideas and coolness, like this guy's talking about, suggestions that may have improved Paint. What if Microsoft had continued to improve Paint? This could have been the result. Check it out. You really need to download it. Cool stuff. Very cool stuff. I like the direction he's headed with it. And this guy, I mean, he's like, you know, these are MIT graduate level computing students that started this project, and now it's continued on, has become an open source project. This thing rocks. So if you are on a Windows platform, now, you know, he wanted something to run under Linux, and Paint.net is not going to run under Linux. You know, okay. And it might run under, I don't know, for .NET if it used Mono, and if you used Wine and maybe ran it, you know, that way, I don't know, maybe it would. I'm not saying that I know one way or the other for sure. But if you're on a Windows platform, you really need to check out Paint.net. Now, I took that out of order in the blog because it directly related with the MS Paint web application. And he had found that article, and that led him to do the email, and that's why I took it out of order. I know that's just not the order of things, but that's okay. Occasionally, we'll do that just to have that tie-in effect, you see. Okay, let's go to the next item in order that we would cover on the podcast, which is the zero-day exploit of Microsoft Word documents. Now, I must admit, I gloat a great deal over this one, because you know that I know, and I say quite often, that Microsoft is evil, and that we should be using open source tools and technologies rather than Microsoft. Well, here's one for you. I go around and I tell people not to use Word on a regular basis and to use OpenOffice.org. But here, I lie not, this is the truth. Microsoft this week told you, don't use Word. You think I'm stretching the truth? I am not. Microsoft says, quote, do not open or save Word files even from trusted sources. Let me repeat that for those of you that lost your attention for just a moment when that car went zipping by on the highway and you went, what was that? Microsoft says, do not open or save Word files even from trusted sources. Why, you ask? Because a zero-day exploit in Word against Word, oh my, makes it unsafe to open or use Word whatsoever. A security advisory from the Redmond, Washington company said that the flaw can be exploited if a user simply opens a rigged Word document. Affected software versions include Microsoft Word 2000, Microsoft Word 2002, Microsoft Office Word 2003, Microsoft Word Viewer 2003, Microsoft Word 2004 for Mac, and Microsoft Word 2004 version X for Mac. The Microsoft Works 2004, 2005, and 2006 are also affected because they include Microsoft Word, and there are no pre-patch workarounds available. Repeat, there are no pre-patch workarounds available. Microsoft suggests that users do not open or save Word files even from trusted sources. As a best practice, users should always exercise extreme caution when opening unsolicited attachments from both known and unknown sources, the company said. Users who have installed or are using the Office Document Open Confirmation tool for Office 2000 will be prompted with Open Save or Cancel before the file is opened. This offers a minor warning mechanism for Word users. The high-risk alert comes exactly 1 week before the company's scheduled December patch Tuesday, but there is no word yet from Microsoft on the timing for its fix for Word. Now notice, the fix, they say, may not be available even by patch Tuesday for December. But my fix is available right now, which is download OpenOffice.org, uninstall Microsoft Office, and use OpenOffice.org. That's the fix. I enjoyed that way too much. Okay, next item. The final nail in SCO's coffin. Now, you know that SCO, the Santa Cruz operation, is, next to Microsoft, the most evil corporation on the planet Earth. It is, really. I'm serious. Anyway, SCO started a lawsuit that's trying to destroy Linux. Therefore, they are evil. Now, it looks like Novell may have the last word in the SCO IBM lawsuit. Because, and I'll just read the article here, an excerpt from the article. Last week saw the end of most of the SCO group's claims that IBM contributed Unix code to Linux. Now, Novell has filed a motion that undercuts all of SCO's contract claims against IBM based on a silver bullet clause, end quotes, in the original sale of Unix to SCO. See, Novell supposedly sold rights to Unix to SCO. But Novell claims that they didn't really sell all the rights, they just licensed it to them. So, in its latest legal move against SCO, Novell on December 1st filed for partial summary judgment against SCO in its own case. In this motion, Novell is asking the U.S. District Court to rule that the Unix API asset purchase agreement, which sold Unix from Novell to SCO, gave Novell the right to waive SCO's contract claims. Novell, in other words, retained the right to waive contract claims. Novell had long claimed that it never sold Unix's IP intellectual property rights to SCO. Basically, they said, we just licensed it to you. This new motion, however, isn't in connection with those claims. In the APA, Novell has what Mark Radcliffe, co-chair of the Technology and Sourcing Practice Group at the law firm DLA Piper, called, when Novell first made these claims, a silver bullet provision under the APA to block SCO's actions under these licenses. This provision prevents Novell to amend, supplement, modify, or waive provisions of the Unix licenses sold to SCO, Ratcliffe said. Novell also retained the unusual right to require SCO to follow its directions to amend, supplement, modify, or waive these licenses, and if SCO does not comply, Novell can do so on SCO's behalf. As I say in the blog, bada bing, bada boom, SCO is history. I love it. I love it. There you go. Once again, good is triumphing over evil. You gotta love that. Now, a serious note. Normally I'm a little wild and crazy on the podcast, but a bit of a serious note here. This past week, I had been following the tragic story, really, of James Kim and his family. They left out from Thanksgiving from Washington State, were driving back to San Francisco, where they live, after visiting family up in the, I think, Seattle area. I'm not 100% sure, but up in the Washington area. Driving back down through, and in Oregon, apparently, somehow they got disoriented, or they tried to follow a track on the map that isn't normally followed, I'm not sure, but at any rate, they got caught in a snowstorm, And when James didn't report for work that following Monday, people got very concerned. He was reported missing. They went out and started doing searches. And they were so far back in the wilderness with such a snowstorm that they didn't find them for, I think it's over 10 days that they were missing. And I remember James Kim from his days on Tech TV when he did what they call the lab rat segments, and he would show some new technology. He was very personable, very nice. You know, just really enjoyed watching him. And of course, when Tech TV was destroyed by G4, which was a shame, then all of the people that worked for Tech TV all went to work for, you know, other companies, different places. He went to work, James went to work for CNET, and he was a CNET senior editor. Well, what happened is they got lost, they got caught in a snowstorm, they were trapped in their car, and James did a lot of things to keep them going, keep their spirits up. He burned things to keep them warm in the heat. They even burned tires from the car because the car was stuck, so they took the tires and burned the tires to keep them both warm and to put off black smoke, hoping that people would see it and rescue them. And then finally, I think probably out of just desperation, because it's not a good move, he ended up leaving the car to try to go get help. And that was the real problem. However, indirectly, that proved to be something that helped ultimately, because a helicopter pilot who, because the tech community had gotten together and said, you know, we want to do something, we want to try to help find them. You know, this was blogged about, it was talked about on the net for all last few weeks. This guy, a private helicopter pilot, searching out on his own, saw James' footprints in the snow and then traced those footprints back to the car and got James' wife, Katie, and his two little girls. They were rescued. They actually had to go down and pick them up and bring them out using a helicopter, I believe. But then when the search teams tried to go back and search and find James, they didn't find him immediately. Another few days went by, and when they did finally found his body, he was dead. And it's a real tragedy, a real shame. And I just followed it all this past week. I don't know why. It just really stuck in my mind, you know, seeing what was going on with this. And so, you know, our prayers and thoughts are with the family. I responded to a blog entry where somebody was saying, you know, I didn't know James personally, but I feel like I did from all the blogging and discussion that was going on and all that this week. And I agree. I never met him. But yet, it's like you knew him because of seeing him on Tech TV and CNET and so forth. And so I said in a response to a blog entry, I hope somebody will put together some kind of memorial fund to help his kids, you know, maybe with college expenses or whatever, scholarship, you know, something like that. And it turns out that is happening. Friends of the family are putting together such a, you know, a trust that will be there for us to be able to contribute to. So I'll try to let you know more about that as that goes on. But a real tragedy in the tech community losing James Kim. He was 35 years old. His, you know, great family man, young family. It was just really tragic thing. So, but the positive side of this, if you want to call it that, is that it's amazing to me how the tech community came together out of concern and out of interest in his particular case. And it really showed the power of the internet and of the tech community to do something positive. And like I said, it was this guy who found out about it through the net and who was using his own time, effort, energy, and expense to go out and use this helicopter that actually found the family. And that's tremendous. It's tremendous use of the power of communication that's afforded through the internet. So, wanted to share that with you. Just been something on my mind this week, which is really what, you know, the blog is about and what this podcast is about. It's just kind of what's going on with me, you know. So, anyway, I wanted to share that with you. All right, let's move on. Next item, Geek Software of the Week. Now, you know I love to share Geek Software of the Week with you. This is another one that came about as something that happened at work. I had somebody at work who said, hey, you know, this computer is acting really weird. Is it possible it's a Trojan? you know, something that is more serious than a typical adware. Adware is what you used to find. Adware or malware infection. So, they were asking me if I knew of something that would find Trojans, that were specifically designed to find Trojans and backdoors, things along that line. And so, Geek Software of the Week this week is A Squared Free from NSI Software. Now, here's what they say about their product. Security must not be a privilege. Under this motto, MSI Software provides the malware scanner A Squared Free, completely free of charge for private use. Kudos to them for that. Okay? This is not a limited version. It is a full tool to clean your computer from malware. Not only spyware, as detected by classic anti-spyware programs, like, for instance, Adware that I mentioned, but also, especially, Trojans, backdoors, worms, dialers, keyloggers, and a lot of other destructive pests, which makes it dangerous to surf the web. This is cool software, A Squared Free. I downloaded it, I tried it, was very impressed, and of course, it's free. There's a link right there in the blog to emsisoft.com, and you go to their free version. They have a paid version too, but the free version, check that out. It's really cool stuff. So that's our Geek Software of the Week for this week. All right. Paint.net gets better all the time. I mentioned that earlier. So, like I said, I kind of skipped ahead to that one. So we'll move on past that one to this one, our last item for the week. And this is in reference to their big Patch Tuesday coming up this coming Tuesday. Microsoft is going to ship 6 security bulletins. 2 of them are critical. Microsoft reported on December 7th that it will ship 6 individual security bulletins as part of its monthly Patch Tuesday update next week with at least 2 of the fixes aimed at addressing critical issues in its products. In a preview of a patch release scheduled for December 12th, which is Tuesday, it said it will release 5 bulletins targeting vulnerabilities in its Windows operating system, at least one of which will address a flaw ranked by the company as critical, its most severe security rating. The 6th bulletin released by the company will attempt to close a critical hole in its Visual Studio development package. Now, no mention of the zero-day exploit in Word. So again, my fix still stands. You need to download OpenOffice.org. Yes, indeedy. Well, guess what? We are just about out of time. There's our music playing. So it must really be the end of the podcast for this week. Oh my. Remember, until next week, the doctor is out of here.